This is a steel cage death match, isn't it? This is.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, product owners all over this great big world, including the many people listening in the UK, welcome back to Deliver It. This is your Agile Product Owners Podcast. My name is Corey Bryan, and I am forgetting all my passwords. I don't like passwords, and I don't like the fact that people can hack your passwords, and then you have to use a program that you can't even remember your passwords because it remembers it for you. I don't like that, but it's the time we live in. I am recovering pretty well, as I mentioned last episode. Thank you, everyone, for sending a note. And I am here today with one of my favorite people in the world. He's the coach, a coach that I've used, a mentor that I've used, a trainer, a blogger, a fellow podcaster. It's Bob Galen. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Corey. And all about good. I'm an all about good fellow as well.
Of course.
Of course. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, Bob is here to talk about a very specific topic and one that I have seen a lot of lately, or not lately, but you know, it's come up over the course of the couple years that I've been doing the show and that I've been talking to things. It's, you know, we'll get into it in a minute, but Bob's here because he wrote an article that I really recommend. But we'll get into that in a minute. The first thing that I saw this last couple weeks that I really liked was Mind the Product had their conference in San Francisco. Again, bucket list thing. I'm going to go to that thing one day. And they talked about what did we learn from that conference. Really good write-up, and the videos will come online shortly. One of them was about fighting distractions. As a person, how do you fight distractions? And it really got me to thinking about how do you fight distractions in your product? What is your product doing that's distracting people? And how do you concentrate? Again, we've used the Pomodoro. Is that how you say that? Pomodoro technique? The 25 minutes? Yeah.
Yep.
I really like that technique. Really good presentation on that. Minimizing our cognitive biases. I love this one because we all have biases. I'm going to talk about a couple of my biases today. But recognizing those biases and then understanding how to either know that you've got those biases or how to react around those biases. I really like that discussion. And then take care of your teams. Again, something that I've talked about a lot is making sure that your teams are well cared for, well fed, is something that Bob's used before. But really, you know, make sure that as product owners and product managers, we're very focused on our teams and very helpful for them. So I really like that write-up. And then Bob had an article that he wrote a couple of weeks ago called Let's Eradicate Bad Product Ownership. And it was in two parts. And I really like 9/10 of it. I really like all of it. And a couple of the things there that were really good, Bob, you said, you know, make sure you don't go alone. There is this notion that product ownership is a team sport and there are product owner, you know, groups, people who support you. And I think that's definitely something that you need to focus on. Make sure you're talking to other people. Outward activity versus inward activity. You know, some people focus only on outward and don't touch at all on the teams. Again, that's taking care of your teams. Emerging requirements, right? Understanding that it's going to change. Product owners who don't expect those requirements to change or don't allow them to emerge, that's in a bad situation. And also, product owners who don't trust the team. So take care of the team, but trust them. The example you give, Bob, is about an estimate. You know, if they say it's going to take a certain amount of time, don't stomp your feet and go, well, it can't take that long. You have to do it in this day. You know, trust them and talk to them about why it takes that long. But I really like that article. Anything else on that article that, Bob, that you've seen? Is that in your coaching? Is that in your classes? Where do you see these bad product ownership things manifest?
I mean, it's still one of those roles, Corey, and you know this probably better than I do. It's a struggle. It's a balance role from my point of view. It's getting, so again, you used an example of trust the team and estimation, but not blindly trust the team, right? Not always, you know, they give these estimates and you're never allowed to question them. So it's not that side of the coin. So I've seen product owners, I think the excellent ones or the good ones getting to good. The hard thing is getting in the middle. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's easy. I think it's easier to either not engage the team with estimates to say that's not my job or I'm trusting them, or to overly micromanage the estimate because of business pressure or whatever.
Right.
But sort of that middle ground where you're a partner. And that's actually what I want. I want the product owner to sort of view themselves. I mean, they're a member of the team, for God's sakes. Right.
Right.
So they're a member of the team, they're a partner with the team. And I still, after all these years of the roles out there, I still think people really struggle. And maybe my coaching travels are taking me to, you know, like jungles or something. So maybe I'm not, you know, in normal teams, but it's still a struggle. So I think that article, I was inspired by someone who I forget. Usually nowadays I get inspired by
someone. Mike Cohen, not Mike Cohen, yeah. Mike Ottmeyer, I think, from Leading Edge.
Oh, it was Ottmeyer. He was talking about that. And so he was seeing a similar pattern or a general pattern. And I just wanted to put meat to it, mm-hmm. right? I wanted to put something on the bone, like here's some specifics if we want to improve them.
Yeah. Okay. And then there's one thing on there that Bob wrote in that article. That's the point of this episode. And the reason I wanted invited Bob to come on is because I think it's something that I would definitely want to talk about. And definitely I want to, I'm not looking to change Bob's mind. I'm not looking for him to change mine. I just want to discuss. That's all I'm here for.
No doubt that this magnificent vessel will give excellent value for the dollars she'll be earning.
So let's get into it.
Which one was it? CEO?
Yeah. So maybe? Let's talk about the product owner being the CEO of the product. Is product leadership, or, you know, the product owner, the product management? A lot of articles have been written about this. I had a lot of information to research through and go and read from. Is anybody considered the CEO of the product? And there was a quote that Bob had in the article, and I'm going to read this. Corey made the statement that if stakeholders don't make decisions or wouldn't engage with his backlogs, then he would adopt the posture of CEO of the backlog. So, Bob, tell me about that. Tell me where you've seen product owners act as the CEO or think of themselves as the CEO.
Well, I mean, you alluded to it, so I'll pick on you first. I mean, You have alluded to that, and I remember in our initial discussion, you were incredibly proud. It was sort of a, I'm trying to think back, and you know my memory isn't as good as it used to be, but if I remember the discussion, however we got there, I think you were incredibly proud of, so if there was an impediment, if there were no decisions, if there was a void, right. I think the original context was, if there was a void, then you got a little puffed, and your shoulders went up and you're like, I will make the decision, mm-hmm. and I will be the CEO if there's a gap there. And I understand that. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. My comment way back when to you was maybe there's an alternative. Mm-hmm. And the alternative is let the problem surface, make it an organizational impediment. And because leaders aren't leading, right?
Right.
So my big issue with it, it wasn't Corey Bryant and it mm-hmm. wasn't making a decision. It was, damn it, the organization is letting you down as the product owner and they need to step up, right? Yeah. No matter what.
Yeah. There's the notion that you, and I completely agree with, which is, well, let's get this out of the way first. Product owners are not CEOs of product. They're not CEOs of anything except themselves. Product manager, same thing, right? Product leadership. And I don't work with CEOs. I've never been in a company where I was more than, you know, I'm always like four or five management steps away from the CEOs. I see them. I know who they are. They may know who I am, but I don't talk to these people. I don't, you know, converse on product strategy with these people because usually my products that I'm, you know, working with are one of many, many, many other things that they've got. So the idea that we are the CEOs of anything is just wrong. I don't like that notion. I don't like that thought process. And there's a lot of people that agree with that. I think your point is if leadership isn't doing the job, then I shouldn't, or we shouldn't cover for them. We should let it fail and then deal with that.
That's the key thing. I mean, I think that was the rub. Mm-hmm. And if I remember back, your rub against that was, oh, then we sit, you didn't say it this way, but then we sit on our hands and we don't make forward progress. So we go to the beach, the team goes to the beach because we're lacking a decision.
Yeah.
And I get that side of it as well. It's like, no, that's not the right response, right? We have to move forward. So can I add something though,
Corey?
Go ahead,
please.
And I'm looking for it. I'm looking for the, so I got a comment about this from Alice. I don't know if you've ever met Allison Pollard.
I have not. I've heard her on the Agile from Humans podcast, though.
Okay, so here's she's actually defending you. I can't believe I'm doing. I'm flipping it.
Allison.
So she said, interesting that you included view yourself as a CEO of the product. She said, I've heard that phrase used by Agile trainers and mentors as the type of behavior they want to see from product owners.
Mm-hmm.
And it's typically alongside a reference to Steve Jobs as the model PO. And then she has little winky smiley face. and then I started to reply, and then I lost my response. So as I was getting ready for this session this morning, mm-hmm. I realized that I had a reply. I lost it. I hit the back button or something, and I wanted to reply to her. But she, and it's not just her comment. And so there's a class of people, trainers, I don't know who they are. She didn't mention names that actually use that analogy quite a bit as sort of normal, or that's where the bar is for POs.
Yeah. So that's the basis for this episode is I want to talk about, you know, how a product owner is not like a CEO and how a product owner maybe is like a CEO, and maybe there's some things there that we can take away and also get a little bit deeper into a specific example of where I would make a decision that, you know, the leadership would not pick. So I will explain a little bit about that. So some of the ways that a product owner is not a CEO, we have no P&L responsibility, right? We don't decide how much money the product makes. We have no budget authority. Usually there are instances where I have had some help and recommendations. I try to make sure I'm smart with the money that the product is allocated, you know, that the teams are allocated. I have had positions where that is part of my remit, that is part of my job responsibilities, but I don't own that budget. I don't make decisions about that, but I can't, you know, just willy-nilly, you know, pull out money or get rid of money as I see fit. That's not my responsibility. CEOs, I think, do have that responsibility, but I don't. So that's one area where I want to make sure we're not doing that as product owners.
Can I chime
please.
In? Hold your thought though.
No.
I have seen POs that have some budget, so they're involved in the ROI,
right?
Sort of they're involved in the business side of a product,
right?
Right. They're involved in forecasting,
mm-hmm.
like profit margins. They're involved mm-hmm. in business case analysis.
Yes.
I think at iPrayo, some of the POs did at least business case and mini business case
yes.
Preparation in some areas.
Yeah.
And then I've seen POs that are involved in the budgeting, like team, not as a CEO, but as a sort of an advisor
yes.
as to how many teams do you need?
Yes.
Can we accelerate this?
Yes.
So you can't fire. So I think you can't fire a team.
Correct.
You can't reallocate the budget for a team to your wallet, right?
Correct.
Or to some other
Correct.
Thing independently. But I do think there's a dollars and cents aspect to the role.
Absolutely. And it's one of the episodes I did before. And I think your key word there that I absolutely agree with is involved, right? We help. We can be involved. We can advise. We can recommend. But we don't decide. Just out of the blue. For instance, the last episode that I did where I talked about the new team that I was that we were staffing up in Cape Town, it took me a long time to get people to agree to that team. If I had P&L responsibility, I would have done it a long time ago, right? But I had to convince
exactly.
others. I couldn't just go out and do it. And so we have no hiring and firing capabilities. We're not the boss, right? There is no power trip with us, or there can't be a power trip. I'm sure some
right.
product owners have been on a power trip and thought they were CEOs, but they can't hire or fire people, and CEOs can. That's another
yep.
way that we are not CEOs. We don't have unilateral decision making. You know, we can't do that. We have to serve others. We have to collaborate. We have to communicate. You know, whatever my whims, desires, or vision are, I can't do it alone. I have to involve others. I have to make sure that everybody is on board, or that I'm doing what other people are wanting me to do. So I don't have that unilateral decision making capability like some CEOs do. Most CEOs do. And really, I think the word that I saw in most of the articles that I read about, you know, our product managers, product owners, CEOs or CEOs of the product is the authority. You know, what authority do you have? Most product owners don't have a lot of authority when it comes to things like what we just talked about. They do have authority in other areas, but it's very limited and it's very scope specific. So I think the authority there with CEOs is pretty universal. Of course, they have boards and they have other things, but it's much far reaching. And again, one of the reasons why product owners are not CEOs, they don't have a lot of authority to do that.
I remember in one, it's like the people side. At one, this chief product owner will remain nameless, but I worked at this place and she asked the, she asked the product owners to evaluate the teams. And it was annual review time.
Mm-hmm.
And so she sort of, you know, unilaterally asked for these reviews and then had all these write-ups and they did a stack ranking of all of the team members.
Right.
And I remember thinking that was particularly, so I assumed that her heart was in the right place, but that was particularly unhelpful to me. It felt like a stepping over of the product boundary, if that makes sense. I mean, literally like doing an absolute evaluation. And it was I appreciated, you know, maybe a high level roll up would have been very useful, but these were like detailed things with almost like a recommendation. Here's the cut line, Bob. We'd like you to get rid of these people.
Yeah.
So that felt to me like maybe CEO level. So I think the people side of things is an influence role as well, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Performance. Sometimes, and I'd like to hear what you say, but I think just product owners have to deal with the hand that they've been dealt from the organization.
Yes.
They very often it's sort of, you have to make the best of the, and hopefully it's not a terrible hand, mm-hmm. but make the best of the hand that you've been dealt. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah. You are in a box. And that box may be, you know, pretty big. It may be pretty small, but you have to operate within that box. Now you can make changes. You can make suggestions, you know, some changes, you can make some suggestions, but there are certain things that, you know, you can't change and you have to find a way to deal with, sadly, and then prove. And that's, you know, that's part of the, I guess it's part of my frustration sometimes is I know there's a better way to do this. I just have to prove it to leaders in the business and so they can get it or teams or dev managers or anybody else that, you know, these are better ways to do things. And it's just going to take a while for them to see that. Especially if I don't have the authority or responsibility to make changes on my own, which 9 times out of 10, I don't. So I have to work and convince people. So some ways that a product owner is like a CEO, we have to ask good questions with teams of experts. We don't know everything, right? We've got teams. We talked about product owner teams before. Those people are much, much smarter than we are on certain aspects, on, you know, on markets, on code, on, you know, usability, those types of things. We work with experts and we make sure that we ask good questions. I've found more and more that's a really key part of my role and my job is just how can I ask better questions? And I really like that aspect, but that's what CEOs do too, at least the good ones. Communication, right? Collaboration, critical. They have to have that skill. We have to have that skill. So I think that's we've talked about that a lot, especially this year. We've talked a lot about listening and collaboration and communication. We have to be evangelists. We have to influence. We have no, like I said, we have no authority. But we do have influence. We can't influence people. We can't inspire, you know, that leadership aspect that you talked a lot about, Bob. And the strategy, you know, that strategy has to come from somewhere. It may not originate with us, but we typically make sure that strategy happens when it comes to product. So those are some areas. Also, I think we do need to understand many aspects of the business. I think we have to have a solid understanding. We may not have an understanding as well as the CEO. But for our products, we may know more than the CEO, the users, the market, those specific things. We may know more than the CEO, but we have to have that understanding of the business, lots of different aspects of that business. There are decisions that we do make, right? I think the example that I was thinking of when we had that conversation initially, Bob, is there was two epics that we could work on. And one of those epics, gave us feature A, and one of those allowed us to, you know, implement feature A, and one of them had feature B, and which one was more important, and they couldn't decide. And we had talked about them for months. We had, you know, done some story maps and broken them down. And when push comes to shove, you know, it's like, okay, we're starting the sprint next week. Which one do we start on? You know, we want to do one of these epics. Which one do we do? They hemmed and hawed and wouldn't decide. And so I said, look, we've talked about both of them. We both know the ROI for both. We both know the ones that I get emails on and conversations on. I think we should do this one. And this is the way I'm leaning. And if we can't make a decision by this date, then this is pretty much the one we're going to do. And that's actually what happened. They said, no, that sounds fine on the day of the date. But I gave them some options. And I told them, here's my impression, because I know what you guys are thinking of. I know you're thinking about these two things. This is the one that I see the more value in. Again, that's one of the product owner's responsibility, is maximize the value from the team. I thought there was more value in Epic B, and that's the one we picked up. And that's the decision that I made, was I've given you the information that I have. You've not picked one. I need something to be picked. This is what I'm going to pick unless you tell me otherwise.
So if it was A or B, and again, this, we're running the risk of rehashing an old conversation. True. But if it's A or B, and let's say they're competing epics, and you're really looking for, it's A done one way, B. So there's a customer problem or a challenge, mm-hmm, that's high priority. Mm-hmm. And we have an A approach or a B approach, and both of them are solutions. And let's just hypothetically say this is that situation, right? And you're frozen waiting for a leadership decision on A or B. You can pick one of those. You could also pick an option and say, well, okay, we're going to remove them to lower priority and we're going to pick C. Mm-hmm. That's actually where, so to me, the C, the thing I struggle with, and it goes back to not hiding dysfunctions. It goes back to leadership. And it's not just product owner leadership, it's organizational leadership. And not being able to pick A or B is an organization dysfunction to me, right?
Yeah.
Particularly, you know, you got to move. My God. I mean, it's competitive nowadays.
Yeah.
So you could stop the presses, or you could pick C. And then when someone comes running to your office saying, holy crap, Corey, what happened? I thought A or B was the next highest priority. Mm-hmm. My God, we've actually sold it. And you're like, you know, you're absolutely right. But we couldn't wait for your decision forever. So I actually put them in the back burner waiting for your decision. And that might come in 2008, you know, in 85. But we're going to proceed with C, D, E, and F, and I'll drive that value. You're putting a light on the organization dysfunction.
Yeah.
So I'm not anti-decision. It's I don't even know if it's a CEO or not. It's covering for organization dysfunction.
Yeah. I like the option C too. And I've done that before too, where it's okay, you know, we've always got some plans, right? I like to do like multiple versions of plans, right? If this happens, this thing could happen. I've, you know, and I'm not talking about two, because two is kind of I've mentioned it before, two is a sucker's choice. I always like to have three. At best, I'd like to have seven, right? Here are seven different plans that we could execute depending on which one makes the most sense. And maybe option C is the right thing to do, right? If you guys won't decide on these things, then we've got other things we can do, right? Our product needs help, so we're going to do these other type of activities while we get to the point where people have made a decision about what the next big strategic thing that we want to do.
Exactly. I mean, I give that same, I coach teams sometimes, and I'm like, if the product owner isn't giving you backlogs, and it's not, you know how I feel, it's not the product owner just giving it to them. But if you don't have a groomed backlog pre-sprint planning, so an option is, so take what you got, or another option is, okay, team, break out your refactoring list and break out your bug fix list and do whatever the hell you want until the business. So highlight the dysfunction. Mm-hmm. And the product owner is going to, of course, running in and go, oh my God, what are you doing? We have all this priority work to do. Yeah, but it's not ready.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So it's sort of the masking of the dysfunction. People aren't always comfortable, not you, but people aren't comfortable with that sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of fail. And it's under the banner of fail fast, if you will.
Yeah.
But getting back, I think CEO, so I have a client right now that I'm coaching. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, another act like a CEO is courage.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I was talking to the senior leadership. I've actually been interviewing the senior leadership team at this client, and they're a little bit frustrated with their scrum teams. from a variety of factors. But one factor is, and it's a command and control. So they're frustrated, but they're sort of the cause of part of the frustration is their command. And they're all largely a command and control leadership structure. And but they're frustrated that the teams aren't being agile and taking charge, et cetera, you know, et cetera. And then one of the POs, and their style is to keep pushing. So, and I don't like this style, but it's like, you know, we're going to push more sausage into the casing. And the only time that we're going to stop, not that you've not seen this in other places, Corey, we're only going to stop if someone says no. And that, and the teams in general don't have the courage to say no. So this, so the sausage is pretty large and the teams are overwhelmed. Well, one of the POs in like a really senior leadership status review said no. And it was actually, and actually everyone was like, so these people who are a little insane and are pushy and command and control, and, but they actually rewarded it. They were like, oh my God, that's exactly what we want. Now
finally.
That's,
yeah.
They were like, finally, that's a product owner.
Yeah. There's the limit. Yeah.
There's, and so it's sort of like the CEO, because CEOs are, you know, if you look at job, I mean, they'll actually tell the emperor that they don't have any clothes. Right.
Right.
There's a courage aspect.
Yeah.
Agree. You think so as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a great, I've been digging into a lot of Marty Kagan stuff because I've newly discovered him. I don't know why I didn't know about him before, but he had a great quote on an article that we'll share about product managers, product leaders really acting as CEOs. And he said, I want us product managers to be ambitious and hungry. And I want them to be confident enough in their abilities to take responsibility for decisions. And I want them to understand they need to worry about all aspects of the business. But I also strongly believe in the importance of humility for a product manager, product owner. And I need to make sure they're not thinking the title gives them anything beyond a shot at earning the respect of their team. I love that. That's what we're, you know, earning that respect of the team, not only your development teams and your teams that are actually building stuff, but your peers, your, you know, your, the people above you, that team, the leadership team of your organization, the board team, the CE, you know, the C-level team. You have to earn everybody's respect in this role. And that's one of the ways you do that. I like that humble word. It goes very well with that courage word, right? It's like, I know what I'm trying to do, but I'm not trying to go on a power trip about it.
Absolutely.
And so some of the reasons, again, just to reiterate some of the reasons why we're here and some of the things that, you know, product leadership, you know, what we're trying to do. You know, I don't want us to get pigeonholed into a backlog administrator, right? We're not as my friend Tim Peters says, we're not a Jira slinging ticket monkey. That's not what we're there for, right? We're there for communications. We're there for collaborations. We're there to solve problems for them, right? They typically don't micromanage us. At least I hope not. I don't like that when I get micromanaged, but we're there to solve a problem, right? We're there to help. And that helping requires us to, you know, to collaborate, to make some decisions, to work on things. But we're not just a task rabbit, right? We're not just an administrivia type administrator. I hate dealing with Jira queries and sorting things out like that, but sometimes I have to, but it's in service to a larger goal. I mean, that larger goal is, you know, how can I help the organizations make products that change the world, right? That's what I want to do.
I mean, it's a big, lately I've been seeing a lot of, probably the last year or two in my coaching journey, Corey, I've been trying to build up product ownership. And again, I'm not trying, I don't want to, I think it's the wrong focus, CEO versus whatever. And I'm never going to reference it again. So you have my I promise that.
All right, show's over. No, okay.
No, exactly. It could be over. But it's how important, it's a big, juicy, freaking, like, huge role.
Yeah.
Like I see product owners, I go in and I see them. I mean, I don't know if you've ever worked with me as a product owner, but I see product owners as decision makers, as courageous. They're not story monkeys. They're not any, I see agile teams that way, but man, when I look at product owners, I'm like, you are the decider. I, as a senior leader, have to trust. I mean, I work with you. I trust your judgment. I give you feedback.
Yeah.
You decide, right? At the end of the day. My term for product owner is more general manager than CEO, but it really is that sort of that general manager mindset. And it's like, I think the entire organization has to serve the PO. I'm not removing humility. I'm not trying to get big headedness, but it is an incredibly, to have that mindset. Like I sometimes yell at POs and when I'm, you are the PO. They're like looking at it as, oh, I'm a role.
Yes.
No, you are the PO.
Yeah, you're supposed to be.
Right. You're supposed to be. It's such a nuanced role that we need to look at it as it's a big deal.
Yeah.
And I do think that's where some of this terminology helps to get people thinking about that, how big of a deal it is, right? Yeah. Not in an overwhelming way. Like, be humble. You're in this unique role. Your team looks at you as a, I mean, you know that.
Yeah.
Your teams look at you. If you do the job right,
yes,
the teams look at you. Is a big deal. I mean, it's like you're leading the team. You're leading their efforts.
Yeah, there was a great episode from the Badass Agile podcast. Chris Williams did an episode on thinking like an owner, and it wasn't specifically on product ownership, but there were lots of things there that, you know, that trust word that we talked about, that humility word that we talked about. You know, acting like an owner is acting like this is your responsibility, right? You take pride in those types of things. You know, you understand what that means. I love that trust word, and I love that humility. You know, we are trying to make sure we make good decisions for teams, for our users, for our companies, and making sure that it's not ego-driven, right? There are some product people who do have huge egos. I get that. I try to make sure I personally don't have a huge ego. I have goals. I have biases. One of the things that we talked about is I have a bias for action. I want to do something. I have a bias for the users. I think they're more important than, you know, most people. But I do have those biases that I know I'm working through when it comes to some of these things. I try to make sure that I, you know, don't overrule anybody or overrule. I try to make sure I don't decide for people, you know, how they do things. I want to pose better questions for them and let them decide. I want to make sure that's more humility. That's, you know, what am I trying to accomplish here? And how can I help the team or the users or the company accomplish that?
I mean, one of the things, the bigness of the role, and CEO implies that, I may not want those letters, but it implies that, or GM, general manager, mm-hmm. implies that, or owner implies that. Todd Olson, I invited Todd, he's at Pendo, and I invited him to do a keynote at the Agile conference in Orlando in November. And when we were not negotiating, but we were, you know, brainstorming like possible topics, mm-hmm. and he made this point that he said, Agile, it's a dysfunction. It's one of these like large scale dysfunctions of agility, is it's narrowly defined the product person to be a product owner. And he's like single-handedly, or in his mind, he's like, that's a dysfunction. It's not a narrow role. And he talks about product management.
Mm-hmm.
And his view is we need to actually expand the product owner role.
Yes.
And include product management and product strategy, yes, and product creativity. Again, it's not big-headedness versus humility. It's more so Agile has really actually, in a lot of instances, people, oh, you're a product owner, and mentally it's like a very narrow function, yes, that just interacts with the team. And Todd is like, you know, it's a real mistake that we've done, and in our coaching and expanding it. And I'm actually trying to do some of that. I want to work that into the book. I'm still working on the book, the next generation of the product owner book.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to sort of work in this, like renew the focus on product management as a skill. It's almost like testing. You can look at software developers and test, and you narrow the testing down,
yeah,
or you look at professional testing, and that is a broad, deep topic.
Yeah.
And the same thing has sort of happened, at least from Todd's point of view. And he's going to be talking about that at the conference.
No, I really agree with that point of view, because there are so many things. I think that the easiest example is you look at what I believe it was Pragmatic Marketing says with, you know, there are 33 boxes that, you know, is on the product management or whatever roadmap, and four of them are overlaps with the product owner. And I'm like, no, there's much, much more, or there should be more, because it should be expanded. It should
exactly.
be, you know, other things other than just the team and that little slice of the product. There should be more things there. So yeah, I like that view too. we talked about trust, right? I think that's where you build up the ability to, you know, earn more decision-making, you know, autonomy. You're able to do things because you're making good decisions. You build up that trust over time. It's not, it has to be earned. It may be given, which is great. It still has to be earned, and you still have to, you know, those decisions that you do make and the things that you do as a product owner, you know, if you do, if you make bad decision after bad decision or bad implementation or bad story after bad story, that's going to cut down on the amount of things and then, you know, you're able to do and the amount of trust that you do build. But as you build more trust and as you do more things, you'll get more of those types of things. And I mean, I don't want to say it's a leash, but it is kind of a leash where they're saying you can do these things, but you can't do these things. You know, you can make these decisions, you can have these approvals, but you can't do this type of stuff. Fall back to, you know, the autonomy, mastery, purpose type thing, which is, you know, what is my purpose here? What do I have autonomy to do? And how can I go about, you know, mastering that? And then, so my comment that I had on the article, which I won't read, you guys can go read the post and Bob's response to it. But I like a word that you kind of pulled out there in your response, Bob, when you called us the lens, product owners, the lens for organizations to pull those ideas from others to make sure that those ideas are being executed. I like that lens word that you put in there.
Well, and it's changing the focus too. So part of that lens is the focal point, changing the focal point. It goes back to, and it really underscores what I was saying. So you can lens towards innovation. You can lens towards priority. You can lens towards the customer. You can even lens towards dysfunction. You know, is sort of the influence you have. Influence almost does it a disservice. It sounds like little I influence. Again, it's this big role of the product owner. Like show the dysfunction and then fix it, or show the priority, or show it to the customer and then show internal stakeholders the customer's reaction. So I don't know if it's a wonderful sort of metaphor or not, but I look at it. I'm paying attention. It's not just I write about it. I'm literally expecting product owners to show me stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I'm literally saying, you know, I don't know. I may not even, you know, but I don't know where we're going.
Yeah,
that's actually back to your AB. That could be part of the frozenness, Corey, is, oh my God, we don't know.
Yeah.
So then show us a direction, et cetera. Yeah.
So I like that word. I like that idea that we're a lens. I like that. So one of the things I did want to ask about, when you talked about, you know, leaders in the organization above the product owners or product leadership abdicating their responsibility to make decisions or to help, what does that look like? What have you seen and how have you seen people deal with it? I mean, we talked about one example of, you know, doing C instead of A and B, but what are some other examples of things you've seen where leadership has said, you know, we're not going to help, or we can't help, or we're too scared to help?
I mean, I don't know if this is exactly going to address, but I wrote a blog post a while back. I was working with Velocity Partners, and there was a product owner who was dysfunctional with their team, and leadership was ignoring that. Mm-hmm. So the product owner was overloaded. So it was, these are complex systems, and it comes back to like, what do you do? So the team was writing all the stories for the product owner. The product owner was too busy, would hardly engage with their team. Mm. The team escalated to leadership. Leadership didn't do anything about it. Part of the reason leadership didn't do anything about it is because they didn't see it as a problem, because the teams were writing all the stories. And the teams were, and actually it was a good agile team, so they were getting lots of stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
But the system was broken. And that said, literally, this is an example of the point I'm trying to make. Sometimes the lens has to show the dysfunction. Sometimes, and we don't want to do that. People are very uncomfortable letting things just go.
Yeah.
Right? Just, or not making a decision. And they would never say that to you that way, right? So their mouth says, I'm going to make a decision. But when you send them an email saying A or B, you hear nothing back.
Yep.
And then you talk to them, and they're like, and they get all puffed up, right? Their head gets big. I make decisions for a living. But then when there's ROI on the table, or you have to piss a customer off, right? You have customer A behind the scenes and customer B, and you can't delay both of them.
Yeah.
Like you're going to give one a piece of software, and you're going to tell the other one, wait a year.
Yep.
Who wants to do that?
Yeah.
There's a lot of frozenness. I don't know if I'm answering your question or not, but there's a lot of frozenness. And I think that's where I was getting at, is surfacing it.
Yeah.
And making it get painful.
Yeah.
Making it look ugly. Mm-hmm. Shoving it under the nose of everyone repeatedly. Then that sort of unfreezes things sometimes.
It's very similar to what some advice you gave me a couple of years ago that I really took to heart, which is trying to make a Kanban board. I was making a Kanban board or something, and I talked to you about something, and you said, just let it be bad. If you have a bad process and you're putting it on the board, let it be. Don't try to fix it. Let it be bad on the board, and then let everybody else see that it's bad, and then the group, the team, the organization can change it.
And it's really uncomfortable. And I remember you probably looked at me like I had three heads. And it's almost like the better you are as a PO, whatever that means. I'm not grading, but the better you are as an employee, the smarter you are. The better you are, the more driven you are, the harder that is to do, right? It's like, holy crap, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
No, we can't allow failure. It's not even allow. We can't show it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But very often that's, you talk about unfreezing things. That's the very thing that you need to do to unfreeze things.
And that's a very coaching type mentality. And it's also a very good model to kind of look at. It's like you're modeling the dysfunction of the organization, or you're modeling the dysfunction of the problem that you're seeing, and you're trying to let others see it. So it's not just you going, this is a problem, we need to fix it. It's everybody right. else. And that's one of those key things that I've learned over the last couple of years is I can think there's a problem and I can go, hey, there's a problem here. But if nobody else believes there is, I'm going to have a hard time moving past it. Right. But if everybody else sees that there's a problem, then it's much easier. So, part of that job is selling that problem exists and showing how it impacts things.
How it impacts the business, how it impacts priority, how it impacts the team, how it impacts decision-making, nimbleness, everything like that.
Yeah.
And it's very uncomfortable because I think we want to fix it. We want to Band-Aid it. We want to work through it, right? So most people's mindset is not to... Because you feel like you're and I'm not saying sabotage it. So I'm not saying add gas to a fire.
Right.
But what I am saying is allow the fire to burn.
And that's, again, that's one of those things where I have a bias for action. But in that case, I have to fight that bias because I know I'm not going to solve this problem on my own. I have to get others to help me see it and solve it because I can't. It's outside of my responsibility, but I like that idea and that advice. And I've tried to use that where I can and when I can.
But I say it, but don't misconstrue it. I realize how freaking uncomfortable
that
is, right?
It's hard.
It's incredibly hard and incredibly uncomfortable to even do that.
Yep. One of the other articles that I came across when I was doing some research for the show is there was an article that said, don't let your CEO be your product owner. Which I thought was an interesting corollary to this, where your CEO makes product decisions that, they didn't talk to you about. And maybe that happens in smaller companies and not bigger ones. But I thought that was an interesting thing of, where CEOs have, especially in startups, where CEOs or founders, were like, one of the only two employees, and they still try to do some of those things. And at what point do they say, I'm going to hand this off to somebody else to make those types of decisions or to help lead it, and I'm going to go do CEO type things. Have you seen that where CEOs try to be product leaders and try to make decisions that they shouldn't?
Well, look, I mean, there's a famous one that Allison brought up, right? Which is Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, Steve Jobs was incredibly, they had UX, they had usability, they had, Apple invested in engineering and in product managers and product. But at the end of the day, he famously was sort of driving that ship, right? And so that's not in an entrepreneurial startup. You see it more in startups. You actually see that. Like the CTO is the VP and the architect of everything, and usually the CEO is driving. A CEO is driving product, and the CTO is driving sort of everything else.
Yeah.
In a lot of startups, you see that pattern, but you see it in mature companies as well.
Yeah.
And again, there's nothing wrong. Being courageous. So we didn't talk about being a visionator, but being that champion and establishing that vision is part of the role as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very much so. All right. So there's lots of great articles. I think we've come to an agreement that the CEO is not, or the PO is not the CEO of the product. Stop calling yourselves that if you are. Stop thinking of yourself if you are.
What term could we agree? Could we sort of duke it out? Corey, so they're not the CEO. Do you like general manager?
I like general manager. Yeah, I like that.
Maybe GM. And sort of in an all-encompassing way.
Yeah.
They're the lead. Could we say they're the leader of it?
Of course, yeah.
Right? They're leading it?
I think so, yeah.
So a general manager, leader, you know, some of those visionary components.
You used a word that I really liked on the last Metacast too, Sherpa. I love that concept of I'm here to help, right? I'm here to help.
So like the... But the product Sherpa, but they're also leading in some ways, right? They're, you know, like they'll get out there and say, don't go that way.
Yeah.
You will die.
Yes.
So right turn, die.
This
left
way
turn.
Leads to death. Don't do this.
Exactly. So I'm not going to let you do that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to let you kill yourself. I'm not going to let you make bad product decisions.
Yeah.
So not CEO, but some of those terms are sort
general
of
manager is the one
from a mindset.
Yeah.
I think it's important to have a mindset.
Absolutely. So we'll have lots of good information to Bob's article and lots of other interesting articles that you can read on that. So I think that was great. Thank you, Bob. And if you have any feedback or any questions about product ownership, you can contact the show on Twitter at DeliverCast or email us at DeliverCast@gmail.com. If you do enjoy the show, please share it with a friend. Tell me you love it. And while you're at it, you can leave us a rating and a review. Had one question this week from Robert who asked about feature teams versus component teams. He says, I've seen a lot of information on the net regarding the challenges of harmonizing feature and component teams. There are many contrasting options about what's best. I'm very much interested in your experience on the ground. How did you guys move forward? What pitfalls and challenges did you encounter on the way? Okay, feature teams versus component teams. I've worked with both. I've spent more time with feature teams than I have with component teams. If I have a preference, it's definitely for feature teams. Component teams have the problem of somebody else still has to do something to that to make it useful. Whereas feature teams, usually you're producing working tested software at the end of every iteration. Component teams, you're not. You may be producing working tested features, but customers aren't going to use it. Other products are going to use it to integrate in and then do something. And then at some point down the line, some customer may see it and give you feedback on it. But the feedback on it is so far away and the integration points are still so far away. I don't like them at all, component teams. I don't like operating in that model. Sometimes you have to, but I've seen much more success. And I think most people would prefer to work on feature teams. Bob, have you seen that?
My experience sort of mirrors yours. I've worked with both. I have more experience with feature. Component teams are like microservice teams. So using a term like microservices, mm-hmm. architectures typically align with component-oriented teams or API teams, mm-hmm. or service teams in IT departments. But less large-scale Scrum talks, they have a skew towards component teams. I don't know if there's a core reason for that. The one thing I would add on to it, Corey, is I think ownership. I'm really big on teams owning sort of cradle to grave responsibility of whatever is in their backlog, mm-hmm. right? So we own architecture, we own bugs, we own end to end demonstrability, all of that customer experience, etc. That's really hard for component teams. Mm-hmm. It's much easier for feature teams to do that. So I think sometimes even ownership gets diluted, right? Accountability can get diluted. And you alluded to the integration aspects. It's much harder for integrating, if you will, or end-to-end integration for component to feature. If I was doing component team architectures, I would be really driving like feature team oriented threads to the customer.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was going, you know, I would personally, if I'm orchestrating an organization, I would sort of conduct both. Meaning have like customer facing features. And if I had a need for some minor component teams, like we're creating a microservice architecture, mm-hmm. then I would have fewer of those than the feature teams.
Yeah. Well, I had an experience one time where I was involved with a team. And when I got there and brought over some existing team members that we had worked with to work on a product, they were setting us up as component teams just from the get-go. Here's your back-end team. Here's your UI team. go. Work together. It's like, okay, maybe we could have, you know, a couple back-end people and a couple front-end people work together as a team on this story. And maybe, you know, maybe we could take those two component teams and split them into two feature teams and reorganize things to make that better. And the view I got, or the answer I got, was no, we're not going to do that. So we had to operate for a few months until the whole thing fell apart, because it was destined to do that anyway. But we had to operate as component teams. So we operated as a agile component team on the UI side, but the back end team was very waterfall. And that was right. One of those things where it's like, this doesn't work, guys. Either just take the UI and do what you want to do with it, or let's work together on solving these problems. And if you don't want to do that, that's fine. Just say that, because these two component teams, they're not really working out because we're not delivering value together.
Well, that's another reason to, like, folks go to components. A lot of traditional organizations are aligned horizontally, mm-hmm. right? That's the way they built their org structures. So then they go agile, and it's really easy to say, oh, the UI team or teams will be component UI teams, et cetera. So you don't have to change. You don't have to face like cross-functional teams.
Right.
You don't have to face the integration sort of stuff. I'm not arguing for it. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a lazy approach to agile introduction. Now, maybe over time, you know, maybe there's cultural reasons for it or disruption reasons, but then you want to sort of remove that. It's not a best practice. I don't think that's a best practice. It's the integration stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's end to end. So yeah, again, using Scrum as the model, we want end to end demonstrability, right?
Yeah. So Robert, hope that helps. Hope it gives you some information. And I know a lot of people start off as component teams, but I think it's something to try to move away from as you can. Thank you, Bob, for being here today on this episode. Bob is at Bob Galen on Twitter, and his coaching, consulting, training, and everything else is at rgalen.com. Anything else you want to let folks know about, Bob?
Nope, nothing other than I'm just traveling. You can give me comments on this to the show. I'd actually like everyone to support Corey, because the CEO wasn't such a bad idea. So we should do a survey or something. But no, I want to, and you know how much I respect you, Corey. I just want to thank you for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to catch up with you in the chat.
And you did mention it briefly, so I'll go back to the conversation we had 10 months ago and say, hey, where's that version 3 of the book?
And yes, thank you, Corey. And I opened the door, didn't I? Like
you did.
A moron.
You did. I did.
It's in progress.
It's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress. I'm actually starting to change. It's not going to change dates too much, but I think there's some focus areas like that, the product. I mean, you brought up pragmatic.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's like 42, if I remember, we were off in the boxes. So Agile maps to maybe 10 of 42 or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's the gap.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to write 800 pages for a product. I mean, there's other good books, but I think we got too narrow. And I think since this is the last edition, mm-hmm. I think I want to beef up some recommendations, and the product area is one of them.
Okay.
So no date commitments. I'm still working on it.
No February. Date
nope,
like
nope,
you did last
nope.
time. Okay.
No, I learned my lesson the last time.
you mean you fixed a date and you didn't deliver? Come on.
No, I made a blood oath commitment to you, right? Or something, right? On air.
Yes.
I know. That was terrible.
The last time you'll ever do that.
Exactly.
All right. And if you are interested in any one-to-one coaching or consulting to help you find your product under balance, you can check out seektaiju.com. All the opinions expressed here are mine. You can find more of them at Is Corey Bryan on Twitter. And that is episode 76 delivered. Go out and own your outcome. This show is part of the Agile Podcast Network. For more shows and information, visit agilepodcastnetwork.com.